Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. Sure. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, best-selling author of The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute, and this is Sell or Die, real-world sales talk. No bullshit, no tricks, just how to make sales, whether you're in Las Vegas or London.
I want some tricks. We are interviewing the best minds on selling and personal development, and we're doing it live. Why live? Because you make sales live, dude and dudette. In the moment.
Thanks for including the dudettes.
That's okay. There's no pre-taping your sales presentation. You can't go, wait a minute, can I have a second take?
We're taking your sales questions live, too. Just send them to us on Twitter, at Gittimer, or at Jen in a New York Minute. Or maybe you don't like Twitter. Maybe you want to email your question in, or maybe you want to advertise on their show. You know, you could do that,
too. Or maybe you don't even tweet. Like, what's that about?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, so all you need to do is contact our amazing producer, Doug. You can email him at sellordie@gittimer.com.
And we will take care of it from there. Now, we're reading every single one of your questions. The man behind the glass wall, our producer, the great Doug Branson. Hi, Doug.
Hello, Jeffrey. Hello, Jennifer. A reminder to our listeners, you can listen to us live on Wednesdays at blogtalkradio.com/sellordie.
What a voice.
And make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. Just search Sell or Die. And while you're there, leave us a 5-star review. It will help other salespeople just like you find this podcast. Jeffrey, Jennifer, what's going on in your sales world?
Well, we've been kind of busy. We New Yorked it last week. Yeah.
Very busy.
It's been crazy. Yeah. I have a big sales presentation tomorrow, and I'm not going to say who it is because it's none of my business, but I've been preparing all week, and I have another preparation probably for another couple of hours tonight, and I will arrive there ready to take yes for an answer.
You've done preparation A, B, and C, and now you're on preparation H.
I am on preparation H. Let me tell you what. No,
Someone's been reading my blog.
Exactly. If I don't make the sale, I'll be on preparation H. But my feeling is I'll be on preparation yippee.
Yeah, I think so too. I think you've done like 20 hours of prep work for one meeting.
What's involved in your prep work, Jeffrey, for a big presentation?
Studying the prospect, making sure that I understand their business from their perspective and what their goals and objectives are. And I've already interviewed the CEO about that. And then I have to add my ideas and my thoughts to it so that when I walk in, I'm making a them presentation. So I understand their company. I have some ideas for them. I'm going to walk in and kill it.
You did a lot of research on their website, a lot of research on their social media platforms.
It's important. This is more than a sale. It's going to be a partnership, even though it's going to be an informal partnership. It's a big opportunity for us. So I devoted the time. I don't take, even though they've already said yes, or quasi yes, I'm not taking anything for granted.
Jennifer, what's your most important thing that you do to prepare for a big presentation?
I just wrote a whole blog about it, so you should go to salesinanewyorkminute.com/blog and read about all of the preparation that I feel is necessary.
Slash blog? That's really innovative.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Maybe it should be the best blog.
Yeah. Damn straight blog.
Anyway, but, you know, like Jeffrey said, prepare in terms of them. If you can talk to one of their customers or someone who works with them or someone who knows them and get an insider tip or inside info, that's always key, too.
Coming up tonight, we're going to help salespeople all over the world, from savvy veterans to sales newbies. Our first guest is the great Alice Hyman. You're going to dig this chick, because she's got a lot of sales history behind her that no one knows about. But you might be able to take a guess from her last name. Right now, she helps sales teams get up to speed fast, and new companies focus on their sales.
Plus, part two of our interview with Map Anything CEO John Stewart, who gives us some tips on getting rid of those time wasters in your workday.
So, come on, let's get to it. It's time to sell or die.
Before we hear from Alistair John, we want to hear from you. Let's take some of your sales questions from email, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. Doug, who's first?
We have a listener email first from Michael B., who is in real estate. Michael writes, I have many products and services which I'm selling or promoting. On inbound leads, I find that after I qualify them for that property and they are not a fit, I find myself hurrying to get off the phone when I can feel my prospects are looking for more assistance. Could you shed some light on how to stop rushing prospects off the phone and shift gears or transition the conversation to other products?
So that person is going to tell five people about their experience with you. And one thing you need to keep in mind is even if you can't help them, if someone else is looking for a broker that you can help, they're going to say, oh, don't use that guy because he rushed off the phone with me and he wasn't very helpful.
Or he was rude.
Right. Or I could tell he was in a rush. So if you keep that in mind, that'll help set your foundation that every customer, every prospect may not be a customer, but they may know a prospective customer.
So here's how to do it. Stop thinking with your wallet. This person's not a good fit for me. Therefore, I'm going to get out of here because I'm not making any money. You're never going to make any money with that attitude, and you're always going to be pissed off about it. So the challenge is spend an extra 5 minutes and tell the guy, I apologize, but I have a hard stop at X. But in the meantime, let me see how much I can possibly help you during that time. And if you need more help, email me or call me, and I'll be ripper and ready to do it.
Yeah, and what you can do is if they're not a good fit for you, have someone who they may be a good fit for and make that introduction. You're doing that person a favor, the person you're introducing them to, and you're helping them out either way. So if you have that bank of people you can rely on, if they're not a fit for you, but they might be a fit for them, you know, you hand it off to someone else and hopefully they take it well from there.
Now you're talking. Doug, what's next?
All right. Up next, we have a question from Reddit user York Consulting, who writes, sometimes my fellow salespeople hate on the gatekeeper. Actually, I'm guilty of this myself. I think this may have a negative effect on the results that I get.
Really?
How important is it to stay positive when dealing with gatekeepers?
All things being equal, people want to do business with their friends. All things being not quite so equal, people still want to do business with their friends. For your information, there's a guy in a back office that thinks he runs the place. The gatekeeper actually runs the place. She's the quarterback. She's the person that directs traffic. She's the one who opens the gate. And if you can't be friendly with that person, odds are you're going to be a jerk to the person that finally lets you in. So my challenge to you is let the gatekeeper be the tone setter. Let the gatekeeper say to the boss, there's a real nice guy out here to see you. I think you ought to see him. Or you can be rude and you can hate on the gatekeeper. Hate on somebody, by the way, is a Southern term. And you're going to say, there's a jerk out here and I'm going to send him away. Okay, send him away.
Well, I just think about it. If I was in their position, if I was the gatekeeper and you were hating on me,
yeah,
I'm not letting you through.
Dude.
Like, this is like...
Who the hell are you?
You think this may have a negative impact on your results? Think? No, yeah. You know it has a negative impact on yourself. Think about if someone was doing it to you, would you let them through?
Actually, what you want to do is tell all your competition to hate on gatekeepers. And that way you'll always get in, you'll piss them off, they'll wonder why they can't do it, and you'll win.
So is there a golden rule of gatekeepers where you treat them like you would want to be treated?
Yeah,
don't be a
exactly.
jackass. Don't be a smartass. Anything with the word ass in it, don't be that.
Doug, I like it. Treat the gatekeeper like you would want to be treated.
That's a golden rule of gatekeepers.
All right, so I love both those questions. You can ask us your sales question, too. All you need to do is email sellordie@gittimer.com. And now it's time for our first guest tonight, Alice Hyman. Is a phenomenal...
Oh, that Alice.
Yes.
I thought you were talking about Alice with the Looking Glass.
No, Alice Hyman.
Oh, Alice Hyman. Yeah, I love her.
She's great.
She is she's gregarious. She is smart. She is part of the fabric of the sales institution of America. and she has insight that will wake you up.
She takes better small than, businesses
and turns
helps
them, into,
them focus on sales first and makes them money.
You can talk about your early career when you were selling brassieres or something, but
yeah, I don't need to talk about that. Whatever you guys want. Well,
no, but your slogan for the company was "My cup runneth over," which I thought was pretty good. It was like biblical and and salesical,
right?
But what about your early? When did you decide that you were going to play sales and you were going to, you know, be involved in your dad's company? Because I think there's a history here that everyone should know about with respect to your capability and your credibility.
Yeah, well, you know, I kind of grew up with sales. You know, being that my dad started that company in the late 70s with Bob Miller, but my dad was always in sales. My whole life, you know, he was a salesperson first, starting at IBM, and then, of course, he worked with many different companies over the years and became vice president of sales and, you know, worked his way up in sales and then, you know, eventually started his own firm. So I've been around that. But really, when he first started the company, I was in high school and the end of high school and really getting into college. And so during the summers or time, you know, when there wouldn't be a lot going on, he would ask if I would do a project or something. And I have six siblings, so we all were somehow involved in the business a little bit here and there occasionally. And when I graduated from college, I actually became a teacher. And then when I was teaching, the same thing would happen. My dad would say, "Hey, do you have time to do a project?" And I would do a project for Miller Heinen. So that's how I really started getting involved. So I worked for them for many years doing projects before I actually started working for them full time in 1994. And it was pretty interesting because I had my own business at that time and I was teaching, but things being what they were had changed. And after my dad and stepmom asking me 20 times to come work for them, I finally said yes.
Can you tell your the audience who the company is so that they might, those people that live under a rock that don't understand who the company is?
They may have heard of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You may have heard of Miller Heinen. Miller Heinen is an internationally renowned sales training company. There are products that you might know more than the name of the company are strategic selling, conceptual selling, and large account management process, which there are three best-selling books that go along with those. So if you went to Amazon and looked up Steve Heinen or Bob Miller, you would probably find those books. But you could look up strategic selling, conceptual selling, and large account management. And all of their sales training programs were based on those books and the teachings around that. They worked with a lot of Fortune 500 companies like Coca-Cola, Hewlett-Packard, AT&T. Those are actually some of the ones I personally worked with, Fidelity Investments. But most of the Fortune 500 companies have had some Miller Heinen training over the years. And that training is for salespeople and their sales managers around how to position yourself better to move a deal forward. And today, a lot of what people are calling account-based selling, that would have been teachings of Miller Heinen. And then also the tactics of how to actually have a good sales meeting and how to not just ask questions, but really be a collaborator in the process. Again, another thing that today they call consensus selling and collaborative selling. These are the same teachings from that started in the early 70s with Miller Heinen. And the way that they deliver that is two-day sales training programs. And again, it's mostly with really large companies that have big sales teams. So that's what Miller Heinen does. And today they're part of a company called MHI Global, which is a merger of many sales training type of companies, including Achieve Global, Forum, and a couple others that you may have heard of. So look up MHI Global and you'll get to know a little bit more about it.
You, Alice, were working at this major company with, you know, a great reputation, and then you went out on your own. How did you make that transition, and what are some of the lessons you learned that our listeners can learn?
Yeah, so, you know, I am an entrepreneur and I have been since my early days. Like as a youngster, I was always starting things. So I have this entrepreneurial blood flowing through me. And, you know, my dad was an entrepreneur. His dad was an entrepreneur. My mom's dad and mom were entrepreneurs. They were farmers. But, you know, think about, really, that's entrepreneurial. You have to prepare everything, you know, and then sell it yourself. So I came from people who are that way. And so I've always been that way. And working, and even before I went to work for Miller Hyman, I was teaching, but I was an entrepreneur. I had my own business, Resource Center for Parents and Teachers, which, you know, I wrote the business plan, started the company, and then 3 years later promptly closed it because it wasn't profitable. So I understood business from my dad's company as well as doing it myself and from all family companies. So once I was working full time at Miller Hyman with some other family members, I learned very quickly that working for your family maybe isn't what it's cracked up to be.
Well, you certainly learn lessons from your dad and from the rest of the people there. And when it's time to go, you kind of know it's time to go.
That's right. So I had a little bit of a parachute. I left, started up my own company, and had some income because I had those. I took those clients with me and was still selling and delivering the Miller Hyman product to them. But what happened very quickly is the dot-com time was there, and people from my clients, these big Fortune 500, you know, like GE Capital and Fidelity and Coca-Cola and some of these other ones, they were jumping ship and going to these dot-coms. And so they call me and say, well, can you help us? I go, well, you know, Miller Hyman doesn't do that.
Uh-oh.
You know, right? So I was like, well, I can do, I don't know, let me come over and see, because I was independent at that point. I'm like, let me see what I can do. Well, what they needed was to start up a sales force from scratch. And so I'm kind of the how-to girl, and I always have been. And I'm like, well, I don't know how to do that, but I can figure it out. So taking what I knew about starting a business myself, taking what I had learned at Miller Hyman, and then just my good practical common sense, I was able to help them at these dot-coms start up a sales team from scratch and get it all going.
Share with me your basic underlying philosophy for sales success. What do you teach people about the selling process that makes you the queen of territory way beyond Reno?
In a small company, everyone has to sell. It can't just be the owners or the one person who's designated as the salesperson or the five people who are designated as sales. In a small business, and probably true in a big business as well, but in a small business, everybody has to have a sales mindset. The culture has to be built around sales, and everyone has to know what their role is in the sales process. So I tell the CEO, simply do this. Go around and ask everyone at your company, what is their role in the sales process, and see what they say. And if they can't answer you, then we have some real work to do. Or if they don't answer in a way that is comfortable, we have some real work to do. And this is a big eye-opener for most CEOs. I mean, any of you out there listening, please try this. Just walk around your office and say, hey, I was just wondering, how do you see your role in the sales process? And if they're like, oh, I don't have anything to do with sales, that is a real trigger for you. Of course, you have something to do with sales. You're doing something that supports sales, or you're doing something that can attract or repel customers, like accounting. They can be a really big sales prevention department. The other big piece for these closely held companies who are mostly owner-operated is, I understand what it's like to have to do all the tasks of a business owner, because I am one and I've been involved with so many owner-operated companies, that I know they have a lot to do, but they have to focus on sales too. And so I have to teach them how to manage their time in a way that they've never even thought about, so that they have the selling time that they need.
So how do you help them find that time?
So the first thing I really do is say to them, what are the prime selling hours in a day? Are your clients international? Are they East Coast? Are they West Coast? Where are the prime selling hours of your day? Now, put a great big block on your calendar. Don't touch this time for anything but sales. Now, if you look at what's left over, then that's the time when you can work with accounting. And that's the time when you can rush down to the floor to see what everybody's doing if you're in manufacturing. Or that's the time when you can do these other things. So I help them just really look at their calendar and reschedule the way they use their time, right? And then I say, now, of all the things that you're doing, which of those could you delegate to somebody else? So owners, they're crazy people. I know I'm one. You're owners. You know, we're crazy people. We think nobody else can do it as good as we can, right? Oh, no, my God, I have to do my own bookkeeping. Are you kidding me? I'm like, really? You're doing $35 an hour work during the middle of your prime selling hours? No, that has to stop immediately. If you can't hire someone you can trust to do your bookkeeping, get out of business now. Close your doors. That's crazy making. So I list all the things that they're doing and I say, how could we train someone else to do this for a reasonable price? Let's get started doing that. And most of it, oh my gosh, it's stuff that they absolutely should not be doing. But because they grew this business up from an infant and started by doing all these things, they've never let go of them. So they have to learn how to delegate or they'll never get those hours back for selling.
So, you know, the owners of these closely held businesses, they're really good at their trade. So let's say they're making cakes. They're really good at making cakes. But sales is not something that they've necessarily done their whole life, which is why they save it for last, right? So what would you tell them if they're new to sales? What would you tell them? Where do they even start?
Well, Jen, not only aren't they good at it, they don't want to do it. So, you know, depending on the life cycle of a company, everywhere from this person making cakes who's going to start wholesaling them to this manufacturing company that's $50 million and has grown up from, you know, zero to $50 million doing things the same way, right? Either way, whether it's a business-to-business sale, which is mostly what I deal with, or a high-end business-to-consumer sale, I don't really deal with retail, but in those kinds of sales, you've got this company, again, that grew up somehow on this entrepreneurial enthusiasm. So some customers somehow came to them and started buying from them, and they started making money. Crazy, right? So here they are. And of course, they did a ton of things right, or they wouldn't be where they are. Once they sold something, they delivered it well. And so somebody told somebody else, and then those people kept reordering. Fantastic. But then they get to a point where they're blocked and they cannot get any further. And some of that has to do with needing capital and knowing when to need capital, which is a whole different issue. And some of it just has to do with now you need to push out. They've just been taking what came in to them as a sale and not pushing out to go get more sales. So, you know, just to get them started, I have to say, look, you are your own best salesperson. Going out and hiring a salesperson isn't necessarily going to solve your problem. Not today, because it will take time to train a salesperson and bring them online and get them going. And you don't even know how to sell. How are you going to train a salesperson?
The new salesperson doesn't have the same heart that the owner does. And they're doing it for a paycheck, and the owner's doing it for family survival and financial peace of mind.
So you're going to go hire a salesperson. And usually by the time I've got there, I get into these companies, they have turned over 3, 4, or 5 salespeople because they think that the salesperson's going to be the answer to all their problems. They don't know how to hire, train, or manage a salesperson. And so they think the salesperson is just going to come in and magically do it, right? And then maybe like some of them have 2 or 3 salespeople and they say to me, I outsell my salespeople every month. And I say, well, of course you do. You think that surprises me? Of course you outsell your salespeople every month. You have the passion. You have the drive. It's your company.
So can you teach a salesperson who's a non-business owner, but an actual person on staff to have the same passion for the product? Can you coach them to have that passion?
That's a really hard one. And that's one of the reasons we end up firing a lot of people. It's like they just don't believe in the product. They just don't have any passion around it. And when I interview them and ask them about their loves and their passions and what they're doing, and I realize really quickly, they're never going to be able to sell this because they just can't get behind it. It's just not even that they think, oh, it's a good product and everything, but they're not passionate about it. So I think it has to come in the hiring process, and you have to source candidates properly and find people who have some passion around these things or people who are passionate in general about helping people. If they have passion about helping people and they don't know anything about your product, you can get them excited about your product if you do it properly. you, again, it's, you know, the onboarding process and teaching them how great your product is and how much it helps people. If they're a people helper and already have that passion, then we can bring them into that fold and show them how your product helps them. And then they'll have some passion around it. But I think if they're already there and they have no passion around the product,
they got to go.
It's possible, but
I'd really love to hear any kind of parting wisdom that you would have for somebody who owns a small business that hasn't had the sense to hire you yet, but needs a little bit of insight about what they can do next in order to secure their business or build their business.
What I really would say to any business owner out there is just slow down for a minute and take stock. Just look at what's going on in sales in your company and ask yourself a few questions. You know, the first one is, are sales where I want them to be? And if the answer is yes, how did we get there? What are we doing right? And then what else could we do to move even further? And if the answer is no, sales are not where we want them to be, ask yourself, where are the failure points? And again, look for some things you've done right because you've got some sales going on. How did that happen? How did that work? What went well there? And then just really look for the failure points. What is it? Do we need more salespeople? Do we need different salespeople? Do we need to fire our sales prevention department or get them turned around somehow? What is it that has to happen? Someone has to get their arms around sales, be it the owner or someone they hire to do it. But it can't be no one. And most of these companies I go into, no one owns sales. It's just hanging out.
Thanks again to the great Alice Hyman. You can find out more about who she is and how she can help you and your sales team at alicehyman.com. Jeffrey, she makes an incredible point. It's amazing how many companies out there think that sales are just going to appear out of thin air, like they're going to fall from the sky.
Combine that with her last statement about the sales prevention department.
I know.
Which I think is just an amazing concept. And you have a company that lives in some fantasy land that's just, you know, they're going to wake up in the morning and big time sales are just going to stop at their doorstep and
their phones are going to ring off the hook.
I brought the money.
The orders are going to come in online.
I brought the money. Yeah, that doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen.
And,
no.
And
you can have the greatest product in the world or the greatest service in the world and it still doesn't happen.
But her idea of making certain that someone sets aside an hour or two a day and does nothing but selling, that's the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the rubber needs to meet the road in that particular
blocking
process.
Blocking that time off. I agree. I agree.
So in case you're wondering of whose sales do not appear by magic, it's Death Wish Coffee. Those sales didn't come out of thin air. These guys are the best coffee on the planet. It's the world's strongest coffee. It's made from the strongest possible combination of perfectly roasted beans. It's a secret formula.
And they have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee. Go get your first bag of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
We drink it.
And you should too. Want to chat briefly on some social media news.
Okay.
I think social media is important to salespeople, very important to salespeople. And, you know, we want to keep you up to date on the important changes that could affect your market, that could affect your sales, that could affect yourself socially. This week's change comes courtesy of Instagram.
Oh, so one of my favorites.
If you downloaded the update this week and you've opened your Instagram, which, like, if you haven't or you don't even have Instagram, that's a problem in itself. But let's assume you have. You've noticed Instagram stories.
Oh.
It's like the coolest thing ever. I love Instagram stories, and it's only a day old.
Yeah, we just used it today.
So it's just like Snapchat,
except,
only better.
Well, it's just...
Okay, so you can take a live video of yourself. It's only a few seconds long. It's timed. You can add in words and filters, and you can tell your story. So what's going on in your day? And, you know,
little itsy-bitsy clips of film that are 10 or 15 seconds long about what's happening. And some of it's weird and some of it's cool, but it's all...
Well, you create it, and you decide if you want to be weird or cool Or both.
And Snapchat was, we should really talk about historically what this means. What does this launch mean? Because at one time, Mark Zuckerberg, the second or third largest country in the world, offered the people who invented Snapchat not a lot of money, like $3 billion.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Just $3
to
million.
Buy it. And the smug, dare I say, stupid ass CEO said, nah, we're going to pass on $3 billion. We think it's worth more. I'm going to tell you that Zuckerberg said, up yours, in a vernacular, and we'll just do it ourselves. We have the engineer, we have the power, we have the money. We don't need you, dude. You didn't invent something that can't be redone. And they just invented a smoother, better way to do Snapchat. Snapchat is an entirely cumbersome program that you don't even know.
I find it really confusing.
You don't even know where you are half the time.
I know.
I don't know which way to swipe.
I don't know if I go up or down or left or what.
Exactly.
It's like not intuitive.
Right. And I'm on Instagram all the time. It's easy for me now to just hit the button.
Yeah, and you already have your base of followers on Instagram. On Snapchat, you have to create a whole new following.
So if you want to hashtag the CEO of Snapchat as one of the dumbest jackasses that ever bit the dust.
He's probably already hashtagging himself.
He will be a waiter at Shoney's within 6 months.
Let's hope not.
Well, I mean, I think it's a good lesson that even if you innovate, even if you do something different from your competition, nothing guarantees that they will not copy you, and you have to be ready to do it better or innovate something else.
Yeah, there was an article I read today, and it was all about how the person who created Instagram Stories basically looked at what Snapchat did and said, I'm going to copy all the great stuff about this, and I'm going to do it better. And he's not even shy about it. He's not saying, like, no, it's not a copy. It's exactly like Snapchat, only better.
So look at it this way. Remember about 7 or 8 years ago when BlackBerry dominated the marketplace and all of a sudden Steve Jobs came out one afternoon, pulled an iPhone out of his pocket, and BlackBerry at that moment was dead. I mean, dead, doornail dead. They went from an 80-something market share to a 2-something market share in under a year and a half. Snapchat will do exactly the same thing. They're going to die. And it's sad that they're going to die, but the pompous-ass president could have had saved thousands of jobs.
$3 billion.
Had put, let's say he could only pocket $1 billion of it.
Only.
Like, dude, that's enough.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, somebody offers you $3 million, your mom would be slapping you in the face. Take it, son, take it. Your dad would be going, what are you, nuts?
Okay, so listeners, here's your challenge.
If somebody gives you $3 billion, take it.
And here's your second challenge.
If somebody gives you $300,000, take it.
And here's your third challenge.
Oh, go ahead, Jen.
What are you doing or not doing on a daily basis that someone could come and take away from you and do just so much better? Think about what you're doing, what services you're offering, what products you're offering, and could someone come into the marketplace tomorrow and offer a better product? And if they can, you need to step up your game.
So I'm going to give you two examples right now. If Mother Google decides that she is going to go into the multi-listing service for real estate, every real estate agent is going to be in mad scramble mode. And let me assure you that Google could do it faster, better, easier, and 10 times cheaper than you can get it right now. That's number one. Let's look at another example.
Ooh, what do you have behind door number two?
Suppose General Motors decides they're going to put the Buy Now button on their website. And every single car salesperson in America will lose their job, in about an hour. And I think that what you're looking at right now is a classic example in the global economic system, because I'm sure Snapchat is global, that you can lose it in a second if you're stupid about the moves that you make, the strategic moves that you make in order to grow your business, number one, and in order to secure your business, number two. This guy thought he was invincible, and he just became Vince or Vincible.
Hey, speaking of innovation, our next guest.
He's a smart guy.
Oh, yeah. This guy is brillante. Our next guest is the great John Stewart. Smart guy, innovator in the world of sales. And he's the CEO of Map Anything. You may have heard him here on the show before. You know why? Because he was here on the show before. This is part two of our interview. He was so brilliant, we brought him back twice. In this installment, he's handing out some great advice for maximizing your time and tells you how Map Anything can help you with that as well. It's not a commercial, it's a lesson. Stay tuned.
I think the biggest time wasters are probably, how about this, things people do to themselves. It drives me crazy even to this day that, you know, when a sales kid, especially a young one, doesn't just ask for the money and just ask for the order, right? Mm-hmm. They extend out the sales process. If we're talking, if we're putting this into the context of sales.
Exactly.
Ask for the order, right? Or they focus on activities that are not going to lead to a resolution, right? Every activity that you do has to lead to an outcome, or don't bother doing the activity, right?
Maybe calling on the wrong guy.
Getting tunnel vision. Absolutely. Getting tunnel vision in a deal, that's the worst thing you can do, right? And again, a lot of some of that's fear, right? It's fear of, I'm going to hear no if I ask for this, right? So I think those are massive time wasters. I think email in many cases, I see my inside sales guys all the time. I walk by and they're writing like War and Peace in their email.
Mm-hmm.
And I get about 200 emails a day. And I was like, you know, why don't you ask me which emails I read?
Right.
I'm now.
Exactly.
Right.
I'm writing a book on millennials. It's called Pick Up the Fucking Phone.
So here's what I tell him. I was like, if I don't know you, you shoot me an email. Have a subject line that catches my attention. Say, my name is X. 2 sentences, 4 bullet points. Done. With a call to action.
Actually, yeah, I don't even like a bullet point because I know it's a sales email. I'd rather have something that says, you know, dear John, I have this. I think it can help you, and in 5 minutes you can determine whether it will or won't.
So I don't mind the bullet points, and I guess, you know, maybe that's the engineer in me. But what is your value proposition laid out?
Right.
3 or 4 bullet points. Make sure the bullet points are ordered to the most important to the least important thing, and a call to action. Right. I'll read those. Otherwise, it's delete. If I open an email and it's like War and Peace and it's like 12 paragraphs, I don't even read it. It's delete, 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 right down the line.
But your emails from your sales guy has to be the shortest thing on the planet.
Yeah.
I mean, I will guarantee you that I can help your sales guy buy back time, see more qualified leads, and do it in a more effective way. And if I can't, you can throw me out. I want 5 minutes.
There you go.
No, I'm done.
That's exactly right. And
I'll send you an invoice.
we do preach that philosophy now. So I mean that is one of the things that we've tried to do, which is that's a big waste of time in my opinion. And because it takes a lot of thought and energy to put something into in an email like that. And it's and primarily my inside guys are pitching SMB people, which is what I am. It's a principal in SMB. So I know exactly what I'm willing to pay attention to. So I know, I tried to share that, and that's a big time waster, of course. And then there's things you can do to claw back those minutes in the day, and ultimately those minutes in the day should give you more time to pick up the phone, call the next one, do your prospecting, whatever it is you need to do. And I would say that's the other thing too, is people don't prospect the right way. They spend a lot of time prospecting, but it's not necessarily the right type of prospecting.
What do you think is the best way to prospect?
Well, I mean, I think in my own experience, it's make sure you understand your value proposition, who it's most valuable to, and just basically start with the people who can say yes, right? So, I never had a problem in my career calling a C-level person, a VP-level person, whatever the case may be, and, you start with people who can say yes. It's okay if they push you down, but by the way, it works a lot better when the CIO of the company has pushed you down to one first level below versus calling the admin and working your way back up.
I totally agree.
So, there's something for that, because then you're saying, hey, yeah, Steve told me that we need to talk. Oh, really? Okay, great. When's a good time for you?
And I'll tell you one other thing. In the old days, and I'm just going to go back 10 years so that it ain't that old, you could not find out who that decision maker was. In today's world, you can find any decision maker on LinkedIn in 9 seconds, maybe less.
Maybe less.
And so there's no you don't have to ask for who the person who decides about. I'm going to ask for Bob. Not, is Bob
not,
there?
Not only that, but you, if you, with an additional 9 seconds of research, usually through blog articles or posts or interviews, you can find out what's important to that individual.
Exactly. You can find out where he went to college. You can find out what kind of car he drives.
You can tailor your message to say, hey, I know this is important to you because you said this X, Y, and Z. Here's how I'm going to play into that approach or philosophy. So yeah, it's a wonderful era we live in if you're in sales.
I totally agree. And people go, well, sales jobs are dying. No, they're not. Stupid sales jobs are dying.
Yeah. Anything that's an order taking or should be order taking is definitely going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're going to left with is, you know, the high value type selling approach. And it should. Anything that is order taking should absolutely go away because a web form is going to be a hell of a lot better and more efficient at it than you are.
I have a lot of questions, but I want to make a statement. I was hired by Salesforce.com to come and do a seminar for their New York City salespeople, people that already know everything.
All New Yorkers already know everything.
Right, exactly. So whatever I'm going to tell them is just going to be a review.
Right.
So I get there and John's there and I go, hey, what do you do? And he gives me a demo of his software and my reaction to it was, holy shit. This is the coolest thing I've ever seen. A sales guy can leave an appointment and find where his next prospect is before he ever walks out the door and call the guy before he leaves to get out on the street and make an appointment. Or find two or three of them and call three people and set one appointment.
It sounds like Jeffrey needs map anything.
Let's put it this way.
I think so.
I'm certainly willing to be a spokesperson for a number. But I think the bottom line is that it is so revealing to a salesperson that they can actually, and this is, I'm sure you've already looked at this, but a guy can take control of his or her time. They're getting time control and lead control at the same time.
They are. And, you know, what we try to say is we're going to give you back hours in the day to go sell. I mean, that's the carrot, right? To get any sales guy to use any of these systems. Because the dirty little secret is, you know, they don't actually like using a CRM system because they view it as basically data entry. So there's always an adoption challenge.
CRM, most purchased, least used software in the history of mankind.
Agree. So there you have to give them a carrot, an incentive, a reason to do it. So that's why what we've doing with Map Anything is we're saying, listen, ultimately you don't make money unless you sell. Let me give you more hours in the day to go sell. Now I'm going to also help you identify those by applying this additional intelligence. Now, yesterday we just launched our business data offering. In other words, let's say you don't even have data inside Salesforce and you're sitting in your little map interface. You could literally say against the database that we have of 12 million businesses in the United States.
Ooh.
Show me tire shops with this much floor space, this many employees, and this much revenue. We're going to pop those up on the map, and you're going to be able to use those as if, you know, that's part of your CRM system. And then, you know, so
cool.
We're trying to turn CRM, because CRM is not necessarily lead generation or
correct.
It is. And no one wants to say this, but it is for the management. It's so they have an idea what's going on in the field that can track opportunity. And it's a very necessary thing for the financial guys and management. But you've got to start giving the salespeople who are your data collection points a reason to do it, to reason to use it. So we've been adding more and more reasons off. You know, we now have, you know, north of 1,200 logos, north of 27,000 licenses under contract. So we have a big enough audience that, you know, and it's 90% primarily field, you know, door knockers. So talking to them, understanding what's valuable and what's important to them, we now understand the things we have to give to them that's going to help actually drive the Salesforce adoption, because they have a reason to go in there. And that reason is, again, it always goes back to, I'm going to help you make more money.
Mm-hmm. But yours actually does. See, there's people who say we're going to make you a lot of money and they can't do jack. But your software will actually work. I mean, yes. A kid can't deny the fact that someone's three blocks away or someone's 2 miles away if an appointment cancels. That's like a manna. It's like a gift from the gods.
And then we also show the management, the sales management, that, okay, here's what your employee did today. Now, as a training tool, by the way, here's what they could have done in the same period of time And here's what they drove by, and here's what they didn't do. Yeah. And can you use this as an instructional tool to help manage down, to help them make more people more productive? So it all goes hand in hand. And there's a little bit of, there's a little bit, I would say from a technology standpoint, there's two generations that we deal with, right, in these large scale enterprises. Mm-hmm. We deal with the guys that are, in their 40s and higher, and they're very, very set in their ways, and they're very emotional about, I don't want to be tracked, I don't want to be, I know what I'm doing. And I constantly tell them that, look, you're not doing yourself any favors. This is the way of the world. You're using an iPhone. You're being tracked every single second of every single day, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Steve Jobs knows where you are, dude.
Yeah, have you ever actually read the use term agreement on any of these things you've put on your cell phone?
Exactly.
No?
Right.
So get past that. And then secondly is, technology is not something that's getting in the way of you doing your job. If applied correctly, it can help you do your job that much better and help you make that much more money. And, again, that younger generation has bought into this. So they're okay with the...
They didn't buy into it. They grew up with it.
Correct. You're right. That's a much better way to say it.
Because they expect it.
They wouldn't know any different. Right.
Yeah.
So, what's the latest craze going on right now, right? It's Pokemon Go, right? That crazy game. My kids they cannot get enough of that game. That's geolocation and activity tracking.
Yeah, exactly.
As a game. So later in life, when they go to a tool like mine and we say, okay, you're going to turn on what your position is because, by the way, Mr. Salesperson, I'm going to automatically log the activity for you so you don't have to.
Later in life might be a misnomer. There's a lot of old guys playing that game.
Yeah, this is true.
The guys who grew up in the 80s or 90s that were Pokemon fans are your employees or your customers.
Yeah, so it is funny, but that every second that you're playing that game, you are being tracked and creating activity based on location.
Doug, our producer, would you mind stepping up to the microphone for just 1 second?
Yes, sir.
How old are you, sir?
29.
And do you play Pokemon Go?
Yeah, I dabble.
Okie dokie, I rest my case.
I actually love the game. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Do you care that you're being tracked?
Me? Absolutely not. It's
cool.
We all have cell phones, right?
Yep.
Every one of us is being tracked. We all use Google Maps. We all use Facebook. We all use any type of social media or the tools that make our life better.
Let's look at the positivity of it. You call an Uber, they track you.
Correct.
So I don't want to not be tracked for my Uber. The guy wouldn't know where to pick me up.
Exactly. So the reason I bring that up is as some of the things that we're doing from a development standpoint is we're getting into the Internet of Things and tying to Map Anything. And one of it is, people – so we ask salespeople. We hate creating activities in Salesforce. We hate the actual everyday secretarial data entry part of it.
Mm-hmm. Everyone does.
Yeah, everybody. No problem. So we have what we call Map Anything Live, which now if you turn on this tracking, no problem. We're automatically going to create the activity record for you based on where you were for how long. I'll take care of that for you. So now you don't have to do that at all.
However.
Wow.
However, mm-hmm. The sales guy is going to want to say, I was there for half an hour and he was only there for 9 minutes.
Well, this is true. We're going to know that he was actually there for 9 minutes. It does make them force a certain level of honesty. But if they're honest with themselves, that's time they can recover to go do the next one.
Let me throw a challenge at you that I have spoken for years. In the early days, before there was a smartphone, I told salespeople to go buy a stopwatch.
Yes.
And sit in front of someone that could say yes to you and turn it on. And when they finish the meeting, turn it off. And at the end of any given day, hit memory recall and see how many minutes you were in front of someone that could actually say yes to you.
What did you find?
Under an hour.
There you go.
And if you want to double your sales, double the amount of time that you're in front of people that can say yes to you. So this is actually a measurement tool for the sales guy to be able to double his sales by tracking his own time in front of people that can say yes and doubling it.
Absolutely. And then tie that back to that whole, rating of your leads, your prospects, your opportunities against where you actually spent your time or how you built your route plan or didn't build a route plan versus how you could have, right? So because the one thing that is great about all these systems is that you now have the metrics. So you have the characteristics, and this is stored in Salesforce, of the accounts, of the contacts, right? And you can get an idea of, for those attributes, for those types of opportunities, how much time did you have to spend in front of them, right? Versus not spend in front of them. And then, you know, and then again, if you can go back to showing you where the greens are versus the yellows and the reds, right? You need, or the reds, yellows, or blues, or however you're going to characterize them. You can now get into, you know, how do you optimize your own personal cash flow? How do you optimize the number of your sales you're doing? So, you know, we're, I'm completely bought into this idea of, you know, I think far too many people don't actually know how long they are spending on site or how long they are spending driving versus selling.
It's funny. I was thinking about that. So we used to map it before we went out on the road. It wasn't something we did like while we were in the moment, but it was more so, you know, okay, I'm going to be here. Let me try to search for the other schools or the other school districts that might be in the same area or somewhere close so we can. And it was a lot of work. I mean, I had one salesperson who literally printed a map of California and then put a dot where every elementary school was and manually did what you've created. And the hours of, he was so proud of it too. I mean, he wanted to frame that thing. The hours of time he put into that, and you know, he could just open your program and have it in seconds.
No, it would have been a better, faster job because you have all the contacts.
And it would have been better, exactly.
So we actually have a bunch of people in the educational business who sell to elementary, middle school, high schools, and to kind of take that step further, we talked about external data. So it's one thing to pull up the high schools on the map that are in your CRM system, but then this is this idea of all these other data sources. Let me bring up the other ones that aren't in your system. And then on top of that, not every school is created equally. Wouldn't you want to go to the ones of a certain demographic, certain number of students, certain number of teachers, square foot area,
funding,
classroom, funding levels? Well, that's all information in the public domain that we now, this is this idea of feeding these external data sources so that, you know, because not every elementary school is the same, right? You want to go to the ones that are going to be the highest possibility of generating revenue and the right type of revenue because not all revenue is the same. Not every dollar is a dollar. So, you know, and this is, you know, in the past, that would be a very, very expensive set of tools and a lot of training. And again, now what we try to do is, you know, we try to boil the ocean down to the whole, again, red, yellow, blue, or red, yellow, green, whatever, however you want to color code it, to make it simple so that you can digest it in a form that says, here are the actual elementary schools I want to, you know, I want to focus on.
Can I pick my own colors?
Your own colors, marker images, whatever.
That was great stuff from John Stewart of Map Anything. If you want to find out more about him, go to mapanything.com. And I should really tell you, I didn't pay that guy to show up here. I actually called that guy and begged him to come here. He hasn't given me a dime. I just think that it's an amazing product. And I think that salespeople waste a lot of their time poking around looking for somebody when they're right around the corner. And their time, sales time is money time. What do you think, Jen?
I like that. Sales time is money time.
Exactly.
You're exactly right. And there are so many great hacks out there. Some that we're just learning about. Some
wait
that we use
minute.
All
wait
the time.
Hack?
Sales hacks.
Oh, give me a break.
It's like the term now.
Oh. You mean there's sales stuff they can do?
There's ways
ideas.
To cut down the time in which it normally would have taken to do them. So, for example, you get an executive assistant from another country that may be less expensive.
An
executive
assist?
You don't have to shorten the word just to make it a hack.
You don't have to save that much time.
Right. I'm just trying to be frugal with my minutes.
There you go. But no, but you know, as I said in the interview, I used to look this stuff up online before
right.
I went out.
Clearly, right? It's a time saver. Clearly.
It's amazing. And so if you're not using it, I think you're losing it.
I agree. So that would be mapanything.com. Just, it's not expensive. Just go and get it. Well, my boss won't pay for it. Dude, the hell with your boss. He's not paying your mortgage payment. You are. Go get it and buy it yourself.
Do you guys have any big time wasters that you've seen in your respective...
Yes.
Sales staffs.
Eating donuts. That's a big
What about waiting online for the cronut?
Yeah. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I have very little patience with respect to waiting online. I can skip Starbucks if the line's around the corner. But there are people that will stand online for 20 minutes to get something that they overpay for.
Yeah. I mean, to Doug's question also, one of the biggest... time wasters I see is email. And it's super useful because you can go in and do what you need to do, and you might have money waiting in your email and you need to respond to people. But there's a lot of BS back and forth that if you would just pick up the phone and call the other person, you could save a five. I have a rule. If I go back and forth with someone two times and they come back to me a third time, I'm not responding on email. I pick up the phone. I pick up the phone. That's my rule.
Cool.
Because otherwise I see it's a time waster.
So, you know, Jen, we're pushing towards the edge of this show already.
All right. Well, I better thank everyone. It's that time.
No.
Don't say thank you.
Well, we're coming to you from Charlotte tonight, so we can thank everybody and pretend we're friendly.
Pretend we're polite.
Exactly.
I'm from New York, but hey. All right. So thanks for listening to us on Sell or Die. We are back live next week at our regular time, Wednesday at 7 p.m. I think we'll be in New York.
We will be.
We'll be doing the show live from New York.
Live from Saturday Night Live.
So
live
here's what to
New
do.
New York at Saturday Night Live.
Bookmark blogtalkradio.com/sellordie. Listen to us on iTunes and come join us live for the conversation that's revolutionizing sales podcasting.
We will be live from the Charging Bull next week. Make sure to subscribe. Join us on iTunes as well as listen whenever you want. Just search Sell or Die. Thank you to our guests, Alice Hyman and John Stewart. Very enlightening people in the world of sales with a lot of history and a lot of wisdom. Our producer, the great Doug Branson, and our technical director, Chris Hill, who is a new daddy, have worked their rear ends off tonight to be able to make this show spotless, clean, and perfect. Only we have supplied the curse words.
Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell, even if your ass falls off.